So thank you. So today I'm going to be speaking about the frequency and intensity of binge drinking 10 to 11 years after exposure to the 9/11 disaster in New York City. So as we know, I'm just preaching to the choir in this room, excess alcohol use is a major public health concern, and it leads to numerous adverse health outcomes, as well as myriad problems with social and occupation. And between 2006 and 2010, excess alcohol use was the cause of 1 in 10 deaths among working age adults in the United States. And in 2006, it cost the United States over $220 billion in costs. So what I'm going to be talking about today will be binge drinking. Binge drinking is defined as 5 or more drinks for men or 4 or more drinks for women on one single occasion. And binge drinking accounted for 3/4 of the alcohol-related costs in the U.S., and more than half of alcohol-related deaths, usually due to alcohol poisoning. In the United States, about 1 in 6 adults binge drinks about 4 times a month, and they consume about 8 drinks per episode. And binge drinking is more common among men, among young adults, and those in a higher income category. So the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks in New York City exposed hundreds of thousands of individuals to myriad psychological and physical hazards, both on 9/11, as well as days, weeks, and months thereafter in both their homes and their workplaces. And these exposures had many negative health impacts. In physical health, you saw acute problems like severe injuries that ranged from severe burns and broken bones, concussions, and then more chronic conditions like asthma. And then, of course, mental health. And we see numerous mental health problems after 9/11, including post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, and depression. So alcohol use is often described as a coping strategy or a form of self-medication that's used by people to moderate the effects and negative symptoms of mental health conditions. And although the directionality of these relationships are not well established, findings from many studies on disasters and other traumatic events like the Vietnam War, the Oklahoma City bombings, Hurricane Katrina, and 9/11 have shown that there is an association between PTSD, having a traumatic exposure, and subsequent problem drinking. Specifically, studies in several distinct subpopulations exposed to the 9/11 disaster, including the Fire Department of New York, Pentagon workers, general samples of New York City residents, and then findings from yours truly at the registry, have found that the frequency of problem drinking was 2 to 6 times higher among those with PTSD symptoms and was higher among those with higher levels of exposure to the disaster. So I apologize to those of you who caught my performance earlier in the week, but you're going to see this slide again. The data source for this study is the World Trade Center Health Registry, which is a closed cohort of over 71,000 persons who were directly exposed to the World Trade Center disaster in New York City. Registry enrollees include rescue recovery workers, both professional and volunteer rescue recovery workers, as well as non-rescue recovery workers who were lower Manhattan area residents, workers, school students, and persons who were just passing by through the area on that day. We have 4 survey waves of data. Wave 1 was conducted from 2003 to 2004. Wave 2 was conducted from 2006 to 2007. And Wave 3, which I'm going to be talking about today, was conducted from 2011 to 2012. And currently, as I speak, we are in data collection for our Wave 4 survey, which is expected to go till the beginning of next year. So the purpose of today's study was to describe the frequency and intensity of binge drinking among adult enrollees, and then to see how this is associated with PTSD and depression and 9/11 exposures, as well as what is the impact on enrollees' quality of life. So this study was limited to enrollees who were 18 or older at the Wave 3 survey, and obviously who completed Wave 3, who answered the questions on frequency and intensity. And I excluded, similar to other studies, enrollees with discordant intensity information. So they said that they had at least 1 episode of binge drinking in the last 30 days, but when asked their intensity, they reported 0 or 1, something that was below the threshold for their gender. And this left me with a final sample of 39,330. So the 2 outcomes were frequency, which is the number of binge drinking episodes in the last 30 days, and that was categorized as no binge drinking, and then at least one episode of binge drinking, which was further broken down into 1 to 4 episodes and then 5 or more. And intensity, which is the maximum number of drinks consumed on a single occasion in the last 30 days. And I categorize that as 8 or more drinks on a single as a max, or less than 8 drinks. And that's based on the national data and what's been done in some other studies. So for covariates, I looked at the usual demographic characteristics, including a measure of social support or social integration, so how many friends folks have, how much they interact with their friends, memberships in groups, and that was categorized as high or low. Then we have PTSD and depression at wave 3. So PTSD was assessed using the PTSD checklist, or the PCL-17, which is a 17-item scale that corresponds to the DSM-4 criteria and was specific to 9/11. Scores on the PCL range from 17 to 85, and we used a cutoff score of 44 or greater to indicate probable PTSD. And for depression, we used the PHQ-8, which is an 8-item scale, and a cutoff score of 10 or greater was used to indicate depression. And to make it easier on the analysis, I combine these into one variable. So comorbid PTSD and depression, having either PTSD or depression, or having neither condition. And then finally, we looked at 9/11 exposures. So we looked at rescue recovery worker status by itself, whether somebody had participated in rescue recovery and cleanup work. And then a categorical variable of exposure, looking at 11 different exposures, ranging from high 5 to 11 exposures, medium 2 to 4, and none or low. And some of the exposures included in this measure were whether somebody was caught in the dust and debris cloud resulting from the collapse of the towers, if people had witnessed 3 or more horrific events, if they had sustained an injury, if they lost a friend, a family member, or a coworker, or if they had been present in the towers. And for quality of life, we looked at some measures from the Wave 3 survey. So that was unmet mental health care need, so reporting that you were unable to get mental health care that you needed in the prior 12 months. A self-rated general life satisfaction, which ranged from very dissatisfied to very satisfied. Self-rated general health, from poor to excellent. The number of poor mental health days in the last 30 days, and 14 or more poor mental health days was used to indicate poor mental health. And then the number of stressors in the last 6 months. And enrollees were asked if they had experienced any of 6 life stressors in the prior 12 months, which included items like being unable to pay for food, rent, or basic necessities, having problems, serious legal problems, problems at home or work, or losing your job. So we used bivariate analyses and then multivariable regression for the factors that were significant at the bivariate level. And in the model, looking at frequency, the reference category is 1 to 4 episodes of binge drinking. And for intensity, the reference category was less than 8 drinks as your max drinks. So a little bit about our study population. The largest proportions were male, were white, were 45 or older, had attended at least some college, had income higher than $75,000 in 2010, were non-smokers, so only 10% of our population were smokers, which may be due in fact part to some awesome smoking cessation programs that I led. A little over half reported high social support. 12% had comorbid PTSD and depression, and 11% had either condition. So the majority had neither. Just over half were not rescue recovery workers. 12% fell into the high exposure category, 44% were in the medium exposure category, and 44% were in the no or one exposure category. So 22%, or about 1 in 5 enrollees, reported at least one episode of binge drinking in the prior 30 days, two-thirds of whom were in the 1 to 4 binge category, and about a third were in the 5 or more binge category. Overall, the mean frequency of binge drinking was just over 5 days, and in the 1 to 4 binge group, it was only 2, but in the 5 or more binge group, it was 11 days in the prior month. The overall mean intensity of binge drinking was 7.4, and it was just over 6 in the 1 to 4 binge group, but it was basically 10 drinks in the 5 or more binge group. So as you can see, there is a portion of our population that's binge drinking very frequently, and when they do it, it is with significant intensity. So I'm going to just go right to the multivariable analysis. So this is the model where we compared 5 or more binge episodes in the last 30 to 1 to 4 binge episodes. So we adjusted for all the covariates listed on the left, and these are the ones that were significant at the bivariate level. And I put age as a continuous variable in the model. So the odds of five or more binges were greater among men, among those with a high school education or less, among those, contrary to what we would kind of expect, those in the lower income category, and among smokers. So again, you know, noting we only had 10% of our population were smokers, 22% were drinkers, but the smoking and the binge drinking really seemed to go hand in hand, as you would expect. Those with low social support, which I will talk a little bit more about on the next slide, among rescue recovery workers, and among those with comorbid PTSD and depression or either condition alone. So among those with both conditions, the odds of drinking five or more times per month were twice as great. And even for people who only had one condition, the odds were 1.5 times greater. And in this model, in this comparison, level of 9/11 exposure was not a significant factor. So here, this is comparing an intensity of 8 or more drinks, comparing an intensity of less than 8 drinks. Again, we adjusted for all the variables on the left, plus age is a continuous variable, and some factors dropped out and some dropped in this comparison. So again, higher intensity was more likely among males with an almost fivefold increase, among whites, among those with a high school education or less, income actually drops out of this model, among smokers, among those reporting low social support, and typically this is an indication that people are not just drinking because they have a lot of friends and they're going out and they're having fun with their friends. This is more an indication that this is drinking that's more solitary and is not because their life is so woohoo great and they're having so much fun. They're really having a lot of emotional problems and are probably drinking as a result. Again, among rescue and recovery workers, and earlier in the week I presented on alcohol and drug-related mortality, and there too, the likelihood of dying of an overdose, a drug-related or an alcohol-related overdose, was almost 4 times higher among rescue recovery workers compared to non-rescue recovery workers. So this is an issue in this population. The higher exposure group was like just this side of significance. And then again, a twofold increase of higher intensity among those with comorbid PTSD and depression, and a 1.5-fold increase among those with either condition. And then just a peek at quality of life. I chose to look at five or more binges, the binging. So no binges, 1 to 4 binges, and then five or more. I also did this with intensity, and then I got really carried away and made a variable where I combined intensity and frequency, and basically it all kind of plays out in this same pattern. Significantly poorer quality of life is reported by those who are binging more frequently and are binging with higher intensity. Specifically, that group is more likely to report unmet health care need. They're more likely to report poor life satisfaction, poor general health, 14 or more poor mental health days, and a greater number of life stressors. So just a few limitations. Data on alcohol consumption is self-reported, which is, I'm going to assume, an underrepresentation of how often and how heavily folks are drinking. PTSD and depression are, although it's commonly used in epidemiologic research, these are self-administered scales. And then we had no information on alcohol use at Wave 1 or prior to 9/11. And also on our Wave 3 survey, I don't own it. At Wave 2, we did not ask about frequency and intensity. So this study is a cross-sectional study because I only had frequency and intensity at Wave 3. But it is a very, very large sample size. It's a population composed entirely of those exposed to the disaster, and we did use standardized, validated instruments. So in summary, enrollees in the registry are drinking with greater frequency and greater intensity than what we do see nationally. And beyond traditional risk factors for frequent and intense drinking, higher odds were observed among enrollees with lower income, with low social support, with PTSD and/or depression, and among rescue recovery workers. And overall, frequent and intense binge drinkers reported poorer quality of life. So, you know, the takeaway from that, and similar to what I said after the overdose presentation, is it's really important that after a disaster or a traumatic event, Those who are exposed are provided with educational materials on the risks of alcohol and other substance abuse, as well as alternative coping strategies for their mental health symptoms. In addition, post-disaster, substance use should be included in mental health screenings, both for current disorders and at-risk behavior. It's one thing to have an alcohol use disorder, but it's another thing to be drinking at a level that is really increasing your risk for an alcohol use disorder, as well as so many other mental and social problems and physical health problems. And then it's really important, a lot of times in some of the treatment programs, specifically post-disaster, substance use disorders are not treated concomitantly with the underlying mental health disorder. Often folks are referred somewhere else to have the substance use disorder addressed and then come back for treatment of the underlying mental health condition. And this happens in a lot of different settings, and it's really important that the two are addressed together because one really is probably likely driving the other. So some future steps on the Wave 4 survey, because I got to help write the alcohol section. I will get much more detail on alcohol use, including lifetime history, so in some analyses I'll be able to exclude lifetime abstainers. I've included questions on prescription drug use and misuse, as well as questions on alcohol drug use treatment and hospitalizations. Our Wave 3 survey was in the field just as was wrapping up just as Hurricane Sandy hit the East Coast. And after that, we did do a study on people who were in the inundation zones and non-inundation zones. And then our Wave 4 survey came after that Hurricane Sandy survey. So I can, in a small set of our population, really look post-event drinking, post-event drinking. So that'll give me a little bit more to associate the actual traumatic exposure to drinking. And then lastly, I'm planning on using latent class and latent transition analyses to look at a combined construct of alcohol use and PTSD over time. So I want to just thank my co-authors and, of course, my funders, without whom none of this would be possible. Thank you. I did not look at that specifically in this, but in other analyses, stratifying by gender didn't really change the effect of social support. And part of it is, although we are largely men, I mean, we have a large portion of our population is men. They are also rescue recovery workers, so a lot of the men in our population do have slightly better social support networks. But I will double check that in this one. Thank you. So for comorbid, it is comorbid, just PTSD and depression, not comorbid with a physical health condition. But we do have a high level of comorbid physical health in this population, both because post 9/11 asthma and other physical health conditions are really prevalent. And then there's also a lot of somatization of physical health symptoms. We don't ask if people are being screened for alcohol use. I do know that those who go to the 9/11 programs, there are programs specifically for post 9/11 care that are offered at no out-of-pocket cost to those exposed, and I know they do screen, but some of the data that I have seen, the WTC programs don't talk a lot about alcohol use, and some of the data I have seen would lead me to think that because these are all in face-to-face physician encounters, that I think they're really underreporting their use. It's important to, yeah, thank you.
Hey, Liz. Hi, Tessa.
Thank you
so much for including frequency and intensity of binge drinking. My question to you would be how this registry population compared to the New York City population as a whole?
So thank you, and you were the inspiration for my doing this study. We are, the registry population just demographically is a little whiter than New York City and slightly higher income, but is drinking with higher frequency than, I have not looked at the intensity in the community health survey, but I do have access to that data and can look at it, but definitely drinking more often than the rest of the New York City population.
Mm-hmm. What your thoughts were in terms of how that relates to the depression or PTSD prevalences in the study population, since we know that depression and certain other mental health disorders can be higher in females.
Yeah, in our population, the prevalence of PTSD and depression is higher among female. It is a risk factor for having depression and PTSD, but the prevalence of PTSD among males is higher than you would expect, and is still higher than what you would see in a general population survey. But I have looked at them stratified, and it still kind of shakes out very similarly. Thank you. Oh. I'm sorry, can you, I can't hear you.
Do you have an operational recommendation for alcohol dependence?
No, we don't ask about alcohol dependence. In the Wave 4 survey, so a lot of including these, so I have some of my colleagues from the registry, and they were there for the whole process of putting our next survey together. Asking certain questions becomes very political. So there are questions on the survey if you've ever been diagnosed with an alcohol or drug-related disorder, and that's probably about as specific as I will be able to get in the near future.
Just following up on that question, since you have also access to, and you can combine with the medical history? If they were diagnosed with alcohol dependence in the clinical setting,
So right now we are not able to match with the 9/11 programs, but we do match with New York State SPARKS data, which is hospitalization data. And my colleague Sarah and I over there, she's planning a study on a SPARKS study on asthma. And then when she is really good with the SPARKS data, her and I will probably collaborate next year and look at hospitalization data and these rules. And then I can actually look at frequency and intent, you know, reported, self-reported measures of drinking then and for hospital admissions for alcohol use disorders. It's the dream. Thank you.